Welcome to our case study call for NEPT for the month of August 2016. I'm Dr. Rita Marie Lascalzo, as you know, and we do these calls once a month. And the way that these calls go is you submit your cases in advance of the call, and there's a specific form for submitting your cases. If you're new and you're not familiar with how to do that, then check in with Lynn. We have an orientation call once a month where she goes through and shows you the site and where everything's located. So you can find all that out for the new guys. So these cases can be anything. So there are ways for us to kind of learn potpourri of different things. And the point is that you'll get like exposure to thyroid or to methylation or to adrenal tests or whatever. But when we submit the cases, we're looking at a process, but we're also looking at some of the labs. And we were going to have some separate lab calls, but it turns out that these are cases turn out to be lab calls in and of themselves, is what I'm trying to say. So you'll learn little stuff and don't feel like, oh my God, I don't even know what all this stuff is. It will come. And the more you're exposed to it and you hear it, the more when we get to the actual lessons and coursework about that particular topic, the more you're already going to know. And you know that it's so much easier to learn new things when you already have a connection with them and you've heard the terminology. I mean, think about in school when you go in class and it's the first day and you're like, holy cow, I don't even know what they're talking about. And eventually you get it. With this, like, because we go through these cases, we're going through genetics, by the time we actually get to the genetics call, you're going to be, I mean, the call, the whole module, you're going to have a familiarity with this. And we have for you, for every single module, pretty much, not every single module, but for all the main modules that we have in NEPT, we have a corresponding, like we call them, the sister program in our consumer site, which you have access to. So if you're in Foundations, you have access to a certain number of those that correspond to the modules in Foundations. If you're in the mastery and certification, you have access to everything that I create for consumers. So it's a really good advantage. And I highly recommend that that's where you start, because you're going to get a lot of the really good foundations when you start there. So Alma, can you hear me? I think I opened up your line. Okay, great. All right, super. So we're going to go through. Thank you for submitting your case. So what you guys should see right now, and Alma, you can confirm this, is your detox report over on the left-hand side. And then on the right-hand side, you should see our cheat sheet, basically, for the detox report. Correct? Is that what you're seeing? Okay, super. So have you been through this, and would you like to share what your interpretations are so far based on what you know or don't know? I know. I remember our conversations at the retreat on the beach about that. Well, if you're okay, so yes, caffeine is definitely, and that affects estrogen metabolism, right? So that's a really important one to make sure that you got on under control. Okay, so basically, and the way that Alma knows this is because she took this cheat sheet, and then she took her report, and she went through and she kind of looked at the interpretations. Again, this is a very short and sweet interpretation. There's a lot of more sophisticated ones, and she ran this through a couple of other nice filters. But all of the stuff that you need to understand this is on that page that I just showed you how to get to. And if you're not sure, because I went through it really quickly, just check in with Lynn and find out when the next orientation call is, and she can make sure that you know. So caffeine metabolism, and that's this CYP 1A2. Yeah, 1A2, the 1A1. Now, just for those of you who are new to the genetics, the yellow is what's called heterozygous, and heterozygous is you got one good gene from one parent, one bad gene from another. I don't like using the words good or bad or just mutations or whatever, because I just don't like it, but sometimes I do, just to get the point across. So one gene that's the correct configuration and the other one that's not. And we call them SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms. So she's got a heterozygous SNP in CYP1A1 and 1A2. Basically, come to this chart, the 1A1 detoxifies heterocyclic amines, so combustion materials, gas. Be super careful about not having your car. It can, if you have a garage that's connected to your home, that when you pull the car in, you leave the garage doors open to the outside for 20 minutes or so, so that the fumes go out rather than coming into your kitchen. Charbroiled meats. So, you know, all these things play in. She's got what's called a heterozygous, means that her body's not quite up to speed. The estimates are when you have a heterozygous SNP, that, you know, somewhere in the 25% to 30% decrease in function, whereas if you have what's called a homozygous, where these would be red, she doesn't have any on this particular one, that you would have, could have up to a 75%. And it varies, you know, depending on the gene and how many other backups there are. So being careful about charbroiled meats, being careful about car exhausts and the caffeine, and these can all increase the risk of breast cancer, ovarian cancer, so hormone related cancers. Anything else that you saw in here that you want to point out or have questions about? Right. 2C9, yeah. Yeah, and I just wanted to point out, she also has a 1B1. And 1B, so there's three of these 1B1s, so, but she's got one of them that heterozygous, and that's also related to caffeine, just to dig the little, what do they call, the nail into the coffin a little bit more strongly. So it's kind of important. So she's got the 2C9, and that means, you know, when you're working with patients with this, you want to be explaining to them that it doesn't mean that you should never, ever, ever, ever take prescription drugs. There's going to be times that you need it, but it's nice to know if you've got some genetic decreases in your ability to metabolize them, so that you can minimize your exposure, and also, you know, especially the ones that are not really necessary or life-changing or life-saving, and that you can know which ones to talk to the doctor about. Well, that one's probably not a good one for me. Can I do different? Like in here, there's non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. So not a good idea to, you know, okay, so for example, Alma says, okay, I'm going to get off caffeine because I've got this issue. And then she goes into caffeine withdrawal headache and says, oh, I'll just pop some aspirin, you know, or Tylenol or ibuprofen for that. Probably not a good idea, just because that's not something that she's going to be handling as well as the person that doesn't have that SNP. So did you have any particular questions about that, or you pretty much understand where that one goes? Okay. Yeah, and so you've got the two, where's the next one? The 1B1, the 2C9. You've got the 2D6, which goes to the next page in here. You know, so you see how this is set up. It's set up in the order so that it's easy for you to do. The more you do them, the more you understand them, but you're not going to memorize all these. And we'll show you in a couple of other reports how you get more. So the 2D6 is, again, more drugs. So she's got several SNPs that are saying, let's just take care of yourself naturally as much as you can, right, so that you don't have to. And a lot of times this is good to know for your patients and clients, because when they're like, they just want to pop this drug or that drug, or they come in, especially people who are in medical practices like Allison and Alma and Phyllis and Mark and a couple of others, are, you know, that those people are like, they may not be oriented towards, well, we don't want that. You know, a lot of times we see the people that go, well, we don't want drugs. We want to know how naturally we could care for it. You're going to be seeing those in medical practice. You're going to see a lot more people who have that brainwashing that, oh, I have a symptom. Give me a drug. What drug can you give me? And then it's really good if you can explain to them, well, you know, because of your genetics, it may not be a good idea. So these are good things to know. You've got the 2D6, right? So here's something to point out. In the 2D6, there's three SNPs reported, and she's got heterozygous in two of them, versus on the 1B1, she's got one of the three. So we could interpret that to mean that maybe the functioning isn't quite as impaired, but that isn't necessarily always true because it varies from one to the next. I just think if you've got impairments in any of them, whether they're heterozygous or homozygous, it's a really good idea to just keep that in mind, not to drive yourself crazy or not to get people so that they add paranoia to the picture, and that's worse than the toxic detoxification impairments, but to really just reinforce with people that we only get the body once, and if there's some genetic impairments in detoxifying this environment, and because we live in a toxic environment, let's reduce the exposures as much as possible. Does that make sense? Probably, but yes, and this picture is some of the more important ones. So these are the ones. Now, you'll look at, when you look at that MTHFR support one that was 49 pages, you know, there's a lot more variations on these as well. So I think it's too new a science to be able to say that, but I just, you know, I assume that, because the more you have, the more impairments you have, the more difficult it is for you to have an efficient detox. So, yeah, I think you just have to be careful when you're explaining that to people to make sure that you don't give them information that may or may not be grounded. That's all. So you could say this suggests that you have 2 out of 3, or you have 3 out of 3. It suggests that you would have more impairment than somebody who has less. And using that language is always good anyway when we're talking to people, that this suggests that versus this is, you know, the Bible for that. Make sense? Yeah. It's just to keep our credibility there, but also to keep people from interpreting what you're saying as medical advice, which it's not. It's just giving them some good, healthy guidelines as to what they can be doing to support themselves better. Again, you know, this one, 2E2, 2E1, it's just, those are environmental toxins, a lot of them, right? Acetone. So if somebody comes in with their beautiful nails and, you know, you're like, ah, you got a red in these 2E2s, you probably want to stop doing the nail polish. And is there a way that you can do something different? So it helps you to be able to almost justify some of the lifestyle interventions that you might normally want to do anyway. Right? Secondhand smoke. I have 2E1s and I grew up with secondhand smoke, right? So it's, and it might be that people notice that, oh my God, I just can't be around smokers, or I can't pump my own gas because I just feel like weird because they have impairments in some of these pathways. Make sense? So this, we don't want to spend too much time on this one. We'll go on to your other one because it sounds like there was a little bit more going on there. But the GST, just to point out, this is glutathione, and this has to do with glutathione's master antioxidant. So you've got a little bit of impairment on there. Now, if you had this GST plus you're suffering from some autoimmune things, I might be talking about suggesting some extra glutathione. If it's not showing and you're taking care of yourself really well, you may not need that. So it just would, everything all revolves around taking a good history. Same thing with SOD. So glutathione and SOD, superoxide dismutase, are really super important in terms of antioxidants. So when you're seeing somebody who's showing some signs of oxidative stress on their body and they have these SNPs, it's a good idea to talk to them about foods or supplements that could support them there. And then NAT, one, you're okay. Two, you've got a couple of NAT2s and it goes back to drugs. So big part of it. And, you know, sometimes you can help piece together a history this way. Like, oh, wow, no wonder I had this particular illness or that, or I was more subject or prone to it than someone else, is because I have trouble with these drug pathways or these exposure pathways, and I was exposed to all these things as a young one or a teenager. So a lot of times it helps people. And one of the things I've found is sometimes people, like, I've had people burst into tears as I'm explaining this to them, like, well, what's going on? Well, all my life my family would just tell me I'm the sensitive one and get over it, right? And it's not, I'm not just like it's not psychiatric. Look at me. I've got all this stuff. It explained to them why every time they took an aspirin for a headache, they went into crazy other symptoms. So it really helps you to be able to make a connection with somebody and show them that, that they're not crazy and there's things that they can do. Make sense? Do you have anything else you want to say or add on that or ask before we go on to the other one? Yes. Yes. It's. Yep. Yep. And it's more than that. It is one of our massive antioxidants. But again, it's about drug metabolism, right? Yep. Yep. So for you, it's really that being careful about that stuff, right? Not popping aspirin, at, like it's candy because you have a little toenail fungus or toenail hangnail or something, which we see people do all the time. I see, you walk into somebody's house and you see the bottle of ibuprofen sitting on the counter like it's, like you'd see tomatoes sitting on my counter. Yeah. Ooh, yeah, so yeah, you got some reds going on in your methylation. Let me open up the methylation one. So we have these are the two we have. They that correspond with these genetic genies. I would love to have a cheat sheet on everything, but I haven't had the time to put something like that together. The beauty of this is I haven't looked closely at his report yet, but Ben Lynch just came out with a genetic interpretation point. It doesn't go through all of the genes, but he actually maps them onto a pathway planner, what he calls a pathway planner. And again, I ran my first one like 3 days ago and I was still on vacation. I haven't had a chance to look at it, but I'll be, as our calls evolve, I'll be sharing more of that with you guys. So here, I'm going to point out the homozygous. So she's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 homozygous SNPs. So basically, it's where mom and dad both gave her a gene that was not optimally functioning. And I'll just start with going through those and then I want to make correlations with some of the others. So the VDR, right? Vitamin D receptors. So people with VDRs generally tend to need more vitamin C because their receptors aren't so good at pulling up the vitamin C. So we see when I see somebody with VDRs, I want to keep their vitamin D in the higher than average range just to keep them protected. So you've got that VDR. Have you ever noticed that you take a lot of vitamin C, but your vitamin D levels don't go up? Yeah, vitamin D. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Given your health history, I would keep it as close to 100 as you can. 90 to 100 range. That's personally what I would do. Okay. Yeah. And then you've got the MAO. I call this the OCD gene, but I mean, it's when it's in combination with others that people have a tendency to OCD. And I don't mean OCD as like the pathological OCD. Yes, people do have that, and that's a disease, a psychiatric imbalance. But a lot of folks have that tendency towards, the towels have to be just so, and I have to make sure that I know everything about everything before I can step forward into it. So attention to detail in a way that maybe is a little bit beyond what's needed in that time, and the inability to go with the flow is more one of the things that that gene does imply. And I personally have one of those. I think it's my only red on this, and I find that I have to watch myself, right? And I laugh at myself sometimes. Okay, there goes the OCD gene. As I was cleaning out the closet the other day, it's like I was trying to put my clothes back in after vacation, and I thought, oh, I can move this, and I can. And then suddenly I'm like, quit, you know, quit, or you're going to be here for 3 days trying to get your closet in this perfect order, and then there's no way to keep it that way. So, and the more you know about this, the more you can laugh at yourself, right? And say, okay, there it goes. There goes my OCD gene. I'm just going to let go. And you have to kind of breathe through it. But knowing that, but some people don't know about it, and in some people it is pretty severe. The combination of the MAO with a VDR with the COMT is what can lead to a lot more of that tendency towards the OCD. And so you've got that. So do you find yourself being very meticulous and kind of what's the word? Hypervigilant. Yeah. So when you get that way, just like, okay, there goes my jeans again. What can I do? Let me do some relaxation. Let me do some heart math tapping. Get myself into a calmer state. And it can happen because I know because I have that gene and I have a bunch of others like GADs and other things like that that would lead that tendency. You know, I'm sitting here going, I got to get this screen share perfectly lined up. And I have to go, it's okay. It's okay. It doesn't have to be perfect. The ACAT, I don't see a lot of the ACATs. I really don't see a lot of that. Acetyl-CoA enzyme. Okay. So this one is, acetyl-CoA is related to a couple of things. It can be a precursor to acetylcholine. It's one of the parts of pantothenic acid, which is important in the conversion of the cholesterol into pregnenolone in the steroid cycle. So that can be something, you know, if I see an ACAT, especially if I see a homozygous one, I would be really looking at their adrenal state and looking at making sure that we're supporting with B vitamins, etc. So, and also for, let's see. Yeah, so the gut dysbiosis, etc. So yeah, and it also it this says it helps to form cholesterol, but it also helps to take your cholesterol and convert it to pregnenolone. So, you know, given that, I would make sure that if you've done your adrenals or haven't done your adrenals, but really look at some of the ways that you can support your adrenals, especially with vitamin B, the B vitamins, and especially B5. B5. So here we have MTHFR. There's two major variations, the C677T and the A1298C. You probably read about MTHFR. A lot of people just like, oh, let's do genetic testing. Let's just do these MTHFRs. But what you see in here is that there's so many interactions between it that if you just say, oh, you've got an MTHFR, let's put you on high dose methylfolate. Because you've also got this COMT, you may not process those methyl groups as effectively. And COMT is catecholamine-O-methyltransferase. And that's also related to the breakdown of estrogen in the liver and the breakdown of catecholamines like, you know, norepinephrine, dopamine, some of your neurotransmitters. So people with the COMT have a tendency towards a little bit more anxiety. People with an COMT and an MAO can have a tendency to even more anxiety. Now, if you add too much methyl group, you add like high dose methylfolate to that picture, you're going to get somebody whose anxiety possibly can be aggravated. So here's the takeaway on this. If ever you're looking at somebody and they say, oh, my doctor tested me, I have MTHFR, and I went on this like really high dose folic acid supplement, methylfolate supplement, and now I just am agitated, I'm anxious, and I don't know what to do. That's a good indication that they probably also have a COMT, or they're in some way they're unable to process all those methyl groups. So the caution is to just be careful about blindly adding things that have methyl groups like methylfolate, methyl B12. You need them. But you have to go really slowly, or you can get this methyl trapping and this anxiety, this hyper anxiety state as a result. Does that make sense? Do you take any B vitamins? So what are the forms of B? What kind of B? You really have to be careful with somebody says they have taking B complex. You want to make sure there's no synthetic folic acid, cyanocobalamin, especially with these. So tell me what's in your Bs. Great. Yes, that's a good one. How much of folate is in there? Yeah, it's low enough dose that it's probably not going to trigger this. It's when you start getting into the gram doses, which a lot of people do, like Thorne has an MTHF, methyl tetrahydrofolate, that has either, they have one that has 1,000, but they also have a 5,000. Like, and somebody starts taking something like that, you can get into trouble. Those are the microgram doses is usually where I have people start, you know, 250 to 400. So that should be fine. That should be fine. You might need more, though. You might need to add more because of the 1-2, the homozygous. So you could play with that, but I would do it slowly. Well, it has, what's the dose recommended? Because if it's a complex, then it has all kinds of other stuff in it. So that's the thing. Yes, it's probably got a full thing. How much vitamin B12 before you go through all of those? How much vitamin B12? 300? Okay, and what do they say is the recommended daily dose for that? Okay, but what does it say, like, you know, take one of these a day, two of these a day, three of these? I'm just trying to get a sense without having to have you read all the other nutrients and decide, like, one per day. Yeah. So I, you know, if you want to get more of a particular nutrient, I wouldn't recommend like doubling and tripling up on a complex like that, because you can throw some other things out of balance. What I would recommend you do is get a liquid B12 and a liquid folate. Let me look at your B12s. You have, you've got one MTRR. The ones that are related to B12 are MTRR, MTR. They're the methyl transfer reductase. So I would tend to get, and this is what I love to do with people, especially when they have this pattern, is getting a liquid like liposomal B12 or liposomal folate. I use Seeking Health. There are other brands that are good as well. And then you can just use single drop additions. And each drop is going to be really small amount. And that way you can titrate it till you get to an amount. And if you have these, it's a good idea to bring them up, you know, probably in the gram dose area. But you don't want to exceed, so you do it slowly. And you can do that by adding a couple of drops. That's the kind of way I like to do it when I'm working with people with sensitive systems like this. Yep. And no, not to stop the complex. Keep the complex. And that'll give you your baseline dose of your B12 and your folate. And then you add to that a little bit of the extra of the others. And then you just keep doing it. You may notice that you feel better. You may notice that you feel more calm. But another reason for this is if we go further down, you see this BHMT. You've got two homozygous on BHMT. And I'm going to show you guys real quickly a picture. Is it on this page? Here we go. Let's see if I can make that picture bigger. Okay, so this is a picture from Ben Lynch. Hard to see in this small amount, but he has these on his site. And he also is running a test now where he shows you where the impairments are. If we go over to, we go over here. This is the methylation cycle, where the whole goal of this cycle is to take homocysteine, bring it around, create SAMe so that it creates methyl donors to help with DNA repair. And there's all these other things that happen in it, which we will go through in excruciating detail when we do that module. But I'm going to see if I can increase the size of this. Yes, I can. Okay. So we basically have this homocysteine, get it converted to methionine, methionine gets methylated to SAMe. there's, if this is impaired around this side, like you have this MTRR, which is help, which means you're not, you know, making it, you can't take cyanocobalamin and easily turn it into methylcobalamin. You're going to be impaired. You still do it, but not completely. An MTR, which you seem to be okay with. But you've also got these methyl groups coming around here. And I don't want to spend a lot of time because it does take time to explain all this. But basically, your whole goal is to get through here. You've got a little bit of a block here. You got a big block here. You've got a little bit of a block in here. And you've got a big block going through the middle. So the body creates these shortcut things. Okay, well, we have this way, but we can also take homocysteine and convert it using dimethylglycine and betaine into methionine. But this is more impaired than your other pathways. So you don't even have that, like, kind of outlet, that extra place. So it's really important that we get you enough of these methyl groups to convert your homocysteine. Now, I don't know if you've done any lab work, but it might be a good idea to check your homocysteine levels to see if it's building up. Okay, because if it's building up, then it for sure says you do need more of these nutrients. If it's not, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're okay on these nutrients. It just means that, you know, it's possible that the reason that it's okay is that this pathway downward is sped up. You only have one heterozygous on the CBS, so likely this pathway down here is okay, and likely homocysteine would be a good indicator for you of your B12 folate status. So you might want to do that, and then just play around with this. When you're under a lot of stress is when this thing's going to get stressed out, right? When you're exposed to a lot of toxins and things, if you're not paying attention to your toxicity report and you're just overloading your system, it's going to slow this down. So under times of stress, you might want to be taking a little bit more of those B vitamins than you would normally. Does that make sense? I hope I'm not just like going, you know, this is complicated and all. And what I would recommend is there's a lot of videos on that page that you can watch and kind of, you know, get more and more familiar with this. And then Ben Lynch has a lot of that. And again, we have a whole module that we'll be doing on this. Okay, so getting back to bottom line would be careful of methyl groups, but don't avoid methyl groups. So your B vitamins is low enough that it's probably not going to aggravate or cause a buildup of a backup of methyl groups, but go slow and you can get the liquids and just titrate up. If you notice that you start to get a little bit more hypervigilant, anxious, etc., then it's too much and you need to back down. Okay? Great. Any other questions about anything on here? Right, that's the folate. Yes, and you might need to address some of the other stuff as well. So if we go back to our sheet here, this is our cheat sheet. I haven't been using it because I have a little bit more, you know, just familiarity with these than the others. And the 1298C is less likely to cause a buildup of homocysteine than the one, the other one, the 699C. You know, so here's where it's talking about the approach, the low-dose methylfolate. So here's something I just would say. If you overdo on adding somebody the low-dose folate, they can have that adverse effect. You can do time-release niacin, and that can help as well. Okay? So, you know, the leaky gut repair, ammonia detox, if that's an issue, there's tests you can do to see that. But I would say, do you get brain fog? Okay, that's right. Got it. Right. And it might be to support. So you're on SSRIs. It might help to support you as you're doing that weaning with some MTHFR, not MTHFR, sorry, with some 5-HTP and vitamin B6. Part of that. Usually when I'm putting someone on neurotransmitter support, if the serotonin seems to be the issue, which is what's addressed with the SSRIs, I will generally give a little bit of tyrosine, because if you have somebody on too much 5-HTP for too long, it can deplete the dopamine pathway. But you just have to be careful about that because of the inability to break down too much of the dopamine. Not the inability, but the a little bit under functioning possibly of that COMT. So you'll have to go by how it feels. If you feel better with the tyrosine as you're weaning off, yes, definitely, for sure. If somebody's going to be on a support like that, like 5-HTP and B6 for the long haul, I'll oftentimes just have them have a small dose of tyrosine with it, like 500 milligrams a day. Okay. Yeah. And then you take the 5-HTP at bedtime. How much? You might have to, because what's your dosage right now? 100 each time? That's a good dose. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tryptophan? It's hard to wean off. Yeah, it's hard to wean off. And this kind of gives you some ideas of where some of that comes from. But the detox and the... It's challenging, but you can do it. And doing liver support and gut support are super, super important for that. Super important. And getting off the caffeine is definitely a biggie for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. SAMe might be helpful. I don't know if you've tried SAMe, but SAMe will actually, so you saw the pathway, right? So the SAMe is what we're trying to get to. Some people benefit from just giving the SAMe. Right? SAMe's over here. It's expensive, you know? I would start by adding it to whatever you're already doing. Yes. Yes. And then you can, you know, play around with it and try to pull it out. But if you just add it and you take away what you're already on, you're giving yourself a confusing situation because you don't really know for sure what did it. Yeah, what's doing what. Okay? Okay? Yeah, good luck with that. That's hard. I know. I know it's hard. Have you read Kelly Brogan's book, A Mind of Your Own? Yeah, yeah. She has a lot of good points in there. Uh-huh. Right. And the crazy part is staying on them and going off of them are all doing you harm. And that's her whole point, you know. So, you know, giving yourself self-care time is super important. You know, being patient with yourself. Clean. Obviously, exposures are important because you've got a lot of those SNPs for environmental toxins and the drugs. And you don't metabolize them real well according to your liver detox SNPs, right? So there's just a lot of reasons to go off of it, but it is hard. Slowly. Just how long have you been on them? Yeah. Right. Yes. Right. So stick with it a little longer then. Go slowly. No. No, but don't go down until you feel stabilized. This is the mistake a lot of people make. They just keep going down. How long have you been going off of it? Yeah, from 4 years to 4 months, that's a rapid weaning. I mean, I know you want to get off of it quickly, but wherever you're at right now, do not lower it again. Try to get yourself stabilized here. So get, you know. Yeah. I wouldn't. I think you have to listen to your body big time. So start supporting these nutritional pathways. Okay, start with the methylated C if you can bring them up a little bit. But again, it's that balancing act. If you notice you feel more anxious, back it off. Try the SAMe. It can't hurt to try the SAMe. And up to 300 milligrams of 5-HTP. I haven't seen anybody doing more than 300 milligrams of 5-HTP per day, but 300 seems to be like that like nice place for it. So you might want to do that. On, yeah, Trudy Scott. Okay. Well, I've never worked with anybody up that. I've usually been able to do it between 2 and 3. Right, those you do. I probably would at least initially, and I would play with it and see what works best. Sometimes they work, they have a synergistic effect, and sometimes it's not so profound. But I would certainly look at that. Make sure your D levels are where they should be. What's your vitamin D serum level? You have to go back and take a ton and take the K with it. One of our people, Heather, she hasn't been on a while. She's been traveling, but she was having such a hard time with getting her D up, and she finally went to just massive doses of it with the K, and she was able to get it up within a couple of months. So don't feel bad about taking more. Make sure you're taking enough K with it. Make sure you're taking A. You know, those fat solubles need to work together, about 5,000. Let's look at your A. Because that can have a problem. That's on, let's see here. Let's just see BCMO1. The page that says Eye Health is the one that has the one related to beta carotene, and I don't remember what page it's on. I don't know if you remember seeing it. Does anybody have that? Know what page that's on? It's down further. Yeah, and you've got some GADs as well, so GABA is probably not a bad idea there. Beta carotene to A, so and you definitely have some, you know, probably have some gluten stuff affecting your thyroid. BCM, yeah. Oh gosh, you need vitamin A. Yeah, you need vitamin A preformed, not beta carotene. No, you got a double homozygous here. I would probably start out on 10,000 a day, and then see if you can maintain at 5. But I would at least do a few months at 10, with your K2, with your D. And I don't know what you mean by a lot, but I've put people on, you know, 20 to 30,000 for months at a time when they're super low. Now you're in the 50s range. How much were you taking of the D? Okay, so 20's not bad. About 20,000. Yeah. Make sure you're taking the K and the A. Stay at least the 20,000. Add the K and the A, then go back at least 20,000 of D. A, I'd do 10,000. And the K, whatever I would double whatever they say. Yeah, you do take K2 then, right? MK4? MK7? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I would do that and then do that for a month and check your D levels. Do that consistently for a month and check your D levels. If your D hasn't gone up, then I would add more D. And the other thing is, the A is super important for thyroid receptors. So if maybe 2, 3 months, see how you're doing. Check your homocysteine levels, check your D levels, and you should be able to get by with 5,000 a day because that's around the recommended, but you might need to stay at 10,000. I mean, it's literally two, if you get the Seeking Health micellized A, it's literally two drops to get 10,000. It's even hard to get 10,000 because, it's hard to get one drop, let alone. Two Z's a little easier. So yeah, I wouldn't worry about too much. You're not going to get into toxicity until you get into much higher doses than that. Okay. Yeah, and there. Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, no problem at all. And there's a whole lot more here, but I'm in light of time. Where's the metabolic? I'll just look through this one real quick. The metabolic healing. This is getting to be one of my favorite reports, just because it's so. They make it so easy to read. So if you haven't done this, this is at metabolichealing.com/23andMe interpretation. Thanks to Jamie, I learned about this. Yeah, so, and I love how they break it down. Yeah, there you go. So gut health, just don't feel too bad. I had FUT2s. I have every single one of mine are red. So, and it means that you need to be careful. Yeah, every single one of mine are red. It makes it hard for you. No, the FUT2 ones, not all of them, but the FUT2 ones here are all, mine are all red. And if you go back to the other report, the MTHFR one, even more of them because they show like seven of them. Mine are all red. I think I have one yellow. But really watching your bifidus intake, right? Making sure that you're getting plenty of bifidus with the FUT2s. Good amount of bifidus. Okay. Yeah. Keep that up. Whatever it takes, whatever it took to get you there. So there's your neurotransmitter stuff, your GADs, your COMTs. I don't remember what the DBH is. Let's see. The MTHFR DBH is, oh, dopamine to norepinephrine, right? Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure about tyrosine then. It may not be your best bet to take the tyrosine, but play with it and see. Get off of it for a little while, see how it feels, go back on it and see how it feels. Because excess dopamine, the inability to break it down, can lead to that anxiety feeling. What was it?
According to them, they're saying that MTHFR in one serum leads to elevation.
It's different. Yeah, I just figure you got to be careful about it. Some say it doesn't lead to it, some say it do. I know the C677T for sure leads to the elevation of it, but a lot of people say that the 1298C won't. What's the NDUF again? I forget that one. Yeah, so you've got a lot of impairment in the electron transport, the Krebs cycle, right? These ND, got three homozygous there. So energy production is hard, and energy production means not just energy production on a hey, I have a lot of energy, but energy production at a cellular level leads to inability to always be able to break down and repair. So, supporting those pathways, the B is definitely important in those pathways. You get niacin and riboflavin, and all the Bs are important there. Yeah. Yeah, the insulin resist related to insulin resistance. How's your blood sugar? Yeah, so be careful with it. Like if you want to really maximize your experience going off these SSRIs and restoring your health optimally, then I would just make your list of all those foods that cause it to go up and stay away from it. It may take, a long time of being off of things like fruits and grains and all. I just had my first fruit in 4.5 years. I had more fruit in 2 weeks in Hawaii than I've had in 4.5 years. I was completely off of it. And I, my blood sugar didn't go up as badly as it did years ago, but when I sat down with this huge plate of fruit, it doesn't work. A little bit of fruit with my green smoothie works. So just be careful about that. It doesn't mean that you have to deprive, but it's just those huge plates. Yeah, so it's be careful. And I have a lot of the, I have similar genes. I have I definitely have the IGF gene as well. Yeah, and here's showing one of the CYPB1B1s as homozygous. Let's see your other one. Oh wait, let me get the exact number on that one. That's the L432V, and this is the This one's showing it as homozygous. The other one's showing it as homozygous. See this one? And this one's showing it as normal. I'm going to see if Jamie's on the line and see if he's had any experience with that. Every now and then you see them that one interpretation interprets it opposite the other. And it's really hard to get the risk allele data. This is saying the risk allele is C, meaning that that's the one that's out, that's off. And this one's saying the this is apparently saying that the risk allele is the G because it's saying you're CC. I'm gonna open up Jamie's line if he's still on and see if he has anything, any comments about that. He's the one that recommended this test and he has a lot of experience with it. I'll look at the chat to see if he's typed anything in. I haven't been looking at the chat at all. Yellen. Oh, he did. Okay, he's still showing up there. Okay. Okay, who's viewer 18 who's saying she's confused? Do you know who that is? Lynn? Okay, might be. I mean, this, like I said, this is definitely confusing stuff, and the more you get exposed to it, the more you're going to get it. And there's so much research on it. So, okay. So Jamie's not there, so we'll just move on. I think we're just going to move on to Allison's. And did you have any other particular questions before we do that? I mean, we could literally spend 4 or 5 hours, and we will. We'll have like a retreat day for going over these things, like an all-day thing, because that's what it takes to really do these thoroughly. Yeah. You're welcome. You're welcome. Let me just see if anybody else has questions. So Tony has her hand up, but it might have been in response to a question I had earlier. Let me see. Tony, did you have a question? Oh, okay, great. You're welcome. And then backup pin. Somebody's on his backup pin. So if you didn't go in with your own, you went in with backup pin. Or if you have your hand up right now, just go ahead and say something. If not. Okay. So I'm opening up Stephanie, if you're confused, no worries. This is like, this is a hard thing to get in on your first call because it is very complicated and you'll be seeing more and more of it. And if it is something that you would like to know more about sooner rather than later, I just highly recommend that you go and hang out in this particular area of the course, the nutrigenomics on the consumer side, because there's a lot of great information there. All right. Anybody else have questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. Steph? Oh, Steph. Oh, Chet. Oh, it was Chet. Yes. Hi, Chet. So hopefully it gives you just some idea of what's available, and we'll go, you know, there'll be more and more. Like I said, these calls are sometimes tend to be a little overwhelming if you're new in because of the cases. I think Allison's might be a little bit more straightforward because it's more like medical stuff that you're familiar with. But yeah, this is good stuff though. You will enjoy learning this stuff because it's going to shed a lot of light on some of the patients that you work with and why they may not be getting responses to what you're doing with them. So good. Thank you. Glad you're here. So somebody has their hand up as a two. I'm going to put your hand down. So if you have any questions, raise your hand and I'll open up your line. Otherwise, I'm going to go ahead. Is Allison on? There she is. I'll open up Allison. Thank you, Alma. Thank you for sharing your case and, you know, just being open and willing to learn. You've got a lot there. And, you know, a lot of it can explain some of your health history up to this point. And you're on the right track. Just know you're on the right track, even though some days might be tough as you try to, like, do the right thing and get yourself off the medications. But I think you're on the right track. Just go slow. Don't be impatient with yourself. You're welcome. So Allison, you're open. Hello. So I can hear you. Can you hear me? I can actually hear you better than I normally can. Say it again. It's fine. It's actually better than you normally. There's a lot of chop and it's really hard to hear you, and I can hear you really well, actually. All right. So is this you? Yes, this is you. No. 7'7". Okay, you're going to have to explain this. Okay. I was like, no, I don't think so. But is it European? Is it meters or something or kilometers? I don't know how you guys measure. But I'm like, oh, it's Allison, the jelly green giant. Okay, 5'7". Okay. Okay. Okay, good. Good. That gives us some good perspective. So anxiety, difficulty focusing, dry hair, mostly the high priorities are here are the anxiety and the difficulty focusing. And we've got, you know, some background. What time are we doing? We're running out of time. But so CMHT. Okay, that's in the Master Health Tracker. Great. Yeah, this will give us a good idea of how to use the Master Health Tracker. She's had some interventions. She put them in the Master Health Tracker too. Great. So you started on 50 micrograms of T4 after. So what was your level? You found out you had a TSH, which was like through the roof, right? It was like 17 or something, or?
18.91.
Okay. All right. So, you know, Allison is a medical doctor. She's in the healthcare system and not anymore, but was in the national healthcare system. Now she's moving out and doing her own practice and more of a holistic type of education. Still sees people on locums in that type of a practice, and decided to do her own thyroid testing and was shocked at the results at finding that it was 18. Unfortunately, over there, they're not doing free T3s, right? You probably would have to do a lot to get a free T3 done. We're going to have to get you set up with Direct Labs when you come over for Shine. You have to give them my... Oh, you did. Yep. Yeah, it does respond quickly, right? Because of the negative feedback loop to the hypothalamus and the pituitary. So as you add T4, the system is going to say, "Oh, we don't have to push the thyroid so hard because we have it there." Still a little on the high side. But did you get the free T? You didn't get the free T3, so you still don't know. Good. Okay, so still that one's still low. So there's probably a conversion. Your body's not converting as optimally as it could, because the free T3 at 1.2 or 3, whatever, is well in the range. And I'll show you on your, let's see, I have your master tracker open. We'll go right there. Is this yours? This might be yours. Let's see. I don't see a name in it, but oh no, this was me playing. Never mind. We'll find it. Here it is. I'm going to make this the full screen, and you guys should be able to still see it. So this is our Master Health Tracker that Allison filled out, and this is a really great form for you guys to use. And we'll go through, I'm going to record an extra video on some of the changes I've made to it. We do have some education on this in the history form, but this is a phenomenal way to keep track of things. So she filled out her vision, her goals, etc. She put in her symptoms, broken. She's had a broken back, poor focus, and hypothyroid. So we're going to go to some of this. She filled in her habit and obstacles. We don't have time to fill it all in, but it's really a helpful thing to be putting down for people: positive habits, negative habits, and challenges. So her negatives, I like to look at some of the negatives. I like to congratulate you on the positives because you've got lots of them, but some of the stuff that's getting in the way is, not slowing down, loving chocolate. I love chocolate too. Not making time for exercise, a lot of stress, and this has been, what, 17 years of a lot of stress being in this job. Sleep, not always getting enough sleep, easily overwhelmed, etc. So these habits, I'm just wanted to look at the diet habits. Is the time challenges. Are you eating gluten, first of all? You stopped it? Yay! All right, good. How about dairy? How long have you been off the gluten? Okay, good. Good. Congratulations. And what about dairy and sugar? You're off of dairy? Great. Fantastic. And did you happen to get your antibodies checked as well when you get the free T3 privately? Yes? Okay. So let's go. Okay. Okay. So you'd convert, you put them into the, oh, you didn't. There we go. Okay, got it. What about your glucose? Did you get your glucose or hemoglobin A1C checked? Okay, good. Oh, look at this. It's in there somewhere. Okay. Yeah, so this is the international. For those of you overseas, you can put your numbers in the international column. It will convert it to the US numbers because you're going to hear me talk a lot about US numbers. So you put your number in the international column, it converts it to US numbers. So creatinine 0.79. White is good. Wait, white is, wait, I forget. So these are a little bit different. Huh. I don't know. Yeah, I think white is good. I don't know why the green. Some of them are white and some of them are green. I think there might be an error in this form, but basically it does the conversion for you so you can see. And then off to the side here, you've got some indications of what it might mean for those of you who are just learning. And from a functional perspective, even if you've been in medicine for years, the functional perspectives are very different. Okay, so alkaline phosphatase is extraordinarily low. Do you remember what that's related to, nutrient-wise? Zinc, okay? So zinc is super important for your hormones, is super important for all those pathways that involve it, super important for thyroid function. So you've got to get your zinc levels up. Okay? They don't do full panels over there, do they? Okay, so definitely trending in the right direction, the free T4. So what I wanted to show you, let's see if we still have this in. Okay, I've got a TS diagrammer tool, see. So I want you to give me the numbers because I'm going to flip to another page and I'm not going to remember them all. So I'm going to remember the 4.71, the 1.25, and 2.27. Oh, good. Okay, yeah. The free T3 was what? You've got to multiply by 100. It's just the scale. Some labs measure them, you know, in picograms and some of them in nanograms and all that. So you just basically look at, what was it, 2.27? You'd put it as 227. So... Oh, okay. Okay, got it. Okay. So 220 here. We're going to put it here. Yours is 228. Okay. 228. So why don't you go ahead and do that and change that to 228? This is a shared document, right? Okay, but in any case, so she's a little not as bad off as she thought. So what you're looking for is putting numbers in this box, this diagram, or this is from Dr. Bruce Hind, really brilliant way to do it, because a lot of people say, oh, well, I'm normal, you know, my TSH is normal, my T3 is normal, my T4 is normal, but there are different ranges of normal. So you want them to line up, and they want them to be in the middle. So her free T4 is perfectly normal, but look where her free T3 is down here. At the 229. So there's clearly a conversion issue. So taking the Synthroid has certainly helped, but it's not definitely not the total answer. So you've got to look at the diet and lifestyle things that can help you convert. I'm hearing an echo. I'm not sure if you have me on speaker or whatnot, but yeah, that's better. The free T three needs to be elevated. So there's a number of things that you can look at. Selenium is important. Zinc is important. Iodine's important, right? Stress hormone levels are important, right? So when we convert the T4, gets either converted into the T3 or reverse T3, we push it towards reverse T3 when there's a lot of cortisol, excess cortisol, or even deficient cortisol. So you have to have the right amount of cortisol. This thyroid scale diagram is great. I just added it to the Master Tracker. So if you've downloaded your Master Tracker before, go ahead and re-download it. And it's on the site under support resources and... NEPT resources, Master Health Tracker. Yeah, so you can download that and get the newest one. So Allison apparently did that. So you've got to do something to either provide your body with the T3. My recommendation would be support your conversion from T4 to T3, but also be doing stuff, something right now, if you can, to get on a little T3. And I don't know that what they, if they prescribe desiccated thyroid over there or, you know, Armor, those sorts of things. The best one is probably Nature Throid. Or you can ask them to give you a little bit of T3. The other thing to be careful about, I don't know if it's true in your country or not, but in over here, you've got to be really careful who you get your T4 from, because some of the manufacturers put starch in there as a binder, and they're not all gluten-free. So I've had people come in who have gluten intolerance, and they think they're off gluten, but then their medications have gluten in it. So those are the things I would be looking at for you. Yeah, so you've got to look it up in the PDR. You've got to look it up. You've got to call the manufacturer sometimes and say, what do you use as your excipients and fillers and binders? And a lot of times they don't disclose it. Okay, so that's what I would be looking at and see, can you self-prescribe, or do you have to have somebody else prescribe for you? But if you can't, then a little bit of T3, or if you can get Armour or Desiccated or NatureThroid or whatever they may have over there to help that come into play. And right now, right, we're looking at, she's got an autoimmune condition. She's got antibodies to her own thyroid. So she needs to be working on that. That's the primary piece that requires attention. But in the meantime, she doesn't want to feel like crap. She wants to get on with her life, and having her thyroid so under functioning has been causing the brain fog, the anxiety and other kinds of things, or contributing to it at least. So we address it this way, but also addressing it from a standpoint of how do you get your body to start making its own thyroid and converting it properly? And the way you do that is you've got to work on the immune system and work on getting all those numbers down. So there's a lot of information already on the site with the thyroid. I know that you've been through our thyroid modules that we have on the consumer side. Tons of information there. A booklet called Thyroid Balancing Step by Step that takes you through, okay, what kind of things, what kind of herbs, what kind of diet can we use to help support somebody to restore balance when there's an autoimmune condition? And how do you support the conversion? I would be working on three issues here, Allison. One is the autoimmune, first and foremost. The second is the conversion issue. But the third one is receptor resistance, because most likely you have also receptor resistance. And this is just a clue. When you're working with somebody and you find the obvious thyroid issue, right? Conversion or autoimmune, if you address those and work on getting those improved, but you don't always also look at receptors, you can get all that stuff looking good on paper and the person still feels like crap. And that's because the lab tests don't always tell you. So you want to make sure you're looking at receptor resistance, which there's no lab tests for directly saying, oh, these receptors don't work. But there are tests of other imbalances in the body. So, for example, look at your vitamin A. I don't remember. I know I looked at your genetics a few weeks back, but I don't remember your BCMO1. Do you have a possible issue with converting beta carotene to vitamin A? Vitamin A supplementation is cheap, it's easy. If you do it at a low enough dose, it's very safe. 5,000 IUs a day of micellized drop of vitamin A or whatever form you can get over there. And then homocysteine. So again, looking at your methylated vitamins and a lot of the things we talked about with Alma might also play into you having issues with the receptors. Does that make sense? Right, because you had the COMTs as well. So again, getting some kind of liquid form of those Bs, the methylated Bs, and going very slowly, because you don't want it to aggravate the already anxious state that you're experiencing. Right, so playing with that, B6 is super important as well. So a lot of people overlook the B6, especially important in the breakdown of the homocysteine. Did you do homocysteine? Okay. And what about vitamin D? You have your what? Okay, so that's on the higher end of normal. So going off the gluten and going off the sugar over the last 3 weeks, that's going to certainly help improve that as well. But you know how to do that, right? You know how to go through. You've been through the insulin resistance training, and a lot of times we go through these trainings and we know how to work it with other people, and we don't do it for ourselves. And I'm as guilty as anybody else with that. Yes, I'm really clear with my diet in terms of the sugar, except for last week when I had a lot of mango. But I don't take the supplements, I don't work on getting my chromium up. Magnesium I probably have fine on because of all the greens I do. But we just have to turn some of the things we know how to do or are learning how to do with other people onto doing it for ourselves, right? So you're going to get your blood sugar in balance. I've seen people who just can't, as soon as they get their blood sugar in balance, their thyroid gets in balance as well as their thyroid antibodies going down. So work on the blood sugar, work on the stress, which I know you work on, you're trying to do the self-care, but looking at the adrenals, and I don't know what's going on in your gut, but that's an important piece of it as well, because all autoimmune diseases have some sort of leaky gut at the call at the base. I'll just put that out there and say that I believe that all autoimmune diseases have leaky gut at the base. So it's basically, where are we going? Look at our pyramid, right? Look at the hierarchy. Look at the foundational lifestyle pieces that you can actually control. You're working on them all, and I congratulate you on that. And you just keep working on those, and you just get better and better with those. Work on your gut, work on your blood sugar to start, right? And it's a band-aid approach to the thyroid by giving it the hormones. And it's okay to give band-aids as long as you're also working on healing the underlying issue. It's not okay to give band-aids if you're just giving out band-aids, right? It doesn't work. So your approach that you've been, in the medical system for all these years is you give the band-aid, you give them T4, you hope for the best. If they don't get better and they still have the anxiety, you give them Prozac to go with it, right? I mean, did I sum it up in a cynical but relatively accurate way? Yeah. And so now you have different tools. And guess what? You get to do them on yourself. Isn't that nice? You get to do them on yourself, play around with it, get the experience of being on that side of it so that you have a lot more sympathy, patience, empathy, compassion for the people you're working with, and a lot more tools because you're going to figure things out a whole lot better when you're actually having to go through it. Does that make sense? Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, that's what I would do. Whoa. Okay, so let's save that for the next time, because we are out of time. I'm going to look at my calendar, make sure I'm not over time on something, but oops, yeah. So I'm not strictly done, but I'm definitely have stuff to do. Okay, so let me go ahead and stop the screen share. And if we had, do you have any other questions, actually? This was a really good case after the craziness we do with Alma, because that was really complicated with the genetics. Not to say yours isn't complicated, but it was really good to pull that in to common, something people are going to see a lot of, which is somebody comes in with their thyroid a mess. They've been told that there's nothing wrong, or they've been just put on Synthroid, but nobody's addressed the underlying. And it's very, very, very common. Very, very common. All right. So did you have any other questions before I open it up to see if anybody else has any other questions? Wonderful. And let me just see if anybody else has any other questions. So anybody else, questions, comments, anything you want to add, anything you want to say to Alma or Allison or anything at all that you think could either help or that you want a clarification on? Anybody? Going once? Going twice? Okay, good. So, thank you all for being here. Thank you, Allison, for sharing your case. I think it's awesome. And I want to just ask you a question. I'm going to put you on the spot here. What are you committed to do next? What's like the next step that you're going to take away as a result of this? Good. Good. That's great. Well, one of the things that getting your own labs done and really looking at it in black and white does is it gives you a little bit of motivation that you may not have otherwise had to say, yeah, I see what this is doing to me. It's not just a theory anymore. It's real. And let me ask you one other question. Have you noticed an improvement since you've been on the Synthroid, the T4? And probably both, because you might have had other good sleeps other times over the last few months and not actually had that same experience. So, it's always it's mo usually a multifactorial, right? It's very rarely just one thing. So the Synthroid isn't going to really just be the magic bullet unless you also incorporate those lifestyle changes and the nutrients and replenish the nutrients. So, good job, and you're going to feel so much better, and it's just going to feed itself the more you do to address this. And when you can address the conversion issue or get yourself temporarily on some T3, and address the receptors. So the main things would be the stress. So I would be curious to see what your Dutch shows, because you can look at what's happening with your adrenals there. All right. Yeah. Well, we could start with what you have right now and address your gut by addressing the food, the really pristine food, getting off the sugar, the dairy, and the gluten is a huge. That's our first step. Stopping and doing your HeartMath, breathing, meditation, appreciation, whatever before each meal, because you said one of your issues is not slowing down to eat. That simple process optimizes your gut function. Right? So all of those things taken in together without specifically addressing the gut are definitely moving you in the direction of better gut function, and then you can move down the road. And it's always an issue of where do I start? And I like to start at the base of the pyramid, but so, like in this particular case, when you find one system, one hormonal system that's so far out of balance, it's you give a band-aid to that while you're working on the base of the pyramid. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you. I'm going to open everybody's lines so you can all say goodbye to each other. And thank you all for being here. We have other calls this week, which we'll get to get hang out on. I think there's we're doing a our long-awaited food religions module. I don't remember what the official name of it is, but I call it the food religions. We're going to start that on Thursday with a live call. And I think we've also got our INE members call on Thursday. There's a whole bunch of calls on Thursday. So if you have time on Thursday, hang out with me and we'll have a lot of fun. So thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.